The complex moral issue of paying hackers ransom. I'm David Brancaccio. The New York Times and the Wall Street Journal are among news organizations reporting that Colonial Pipeline did pay hackers ransom to regain control of their data and their systems, reportedly something in the $5 million range. The biggest gasoline, diesel, and aviation fuel pipeline in the country is back on, although fuel supplies have yet to stabilize and some gas stations are still out. Paying extortionists. Let's bring in Joe Tidy, who covers cyber matters for our editorial partner, the BBC. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
So with this variety of published reports saying that the pipeline company actually paid the ransom, what do you think? Does this become the new normal for companies who face this situation?
Well, it kind of already is the new normal. We never really get accurate statistics on this because, of course, ransomware, like many forms of cyber attack, it's a very secretive culture. The victims are told by their insurers and by sometimes authorities like cyber authorities around the world not to tell the press, not to talk about it in public. So we don't really know the true figure of the number of companies that pay, but we know a lot of them do. I mean, I would probably guess around half or just over half do actually pay the criminals. But then, of course, you do get the outliers who are open and honest and say, we didn't pay and this is how we recovered.
Well, I recall a big company that refused to pay. I think you followed this, the ransomware attack back in 2019 against the aluminum and electric power company in Norway called Norsk Hydro. They said no to the ransom?
They did, yeah. They're one of the very rare companies out there who not only got attacked and are open and honest about it, but also they said they refused to pay. And I went and visited the manufacturing plant and the HQ in Norway and spoke to them about 6 months after their attack and about how they're recovering. They went the kind of the long, hard road of rebuilding their systems from scratch. They had to buy and rebuild hundreds, thousands of different PCs and computers. And of course, they had to stop their production lines. They couldn't produce any aluminium. Of course, it is in a similar way to the Colonial Pipeline attack, the actual facilities weren't affected. They could still make aluminium. They could still process all this metal. But it's the fact that the back-end systems, the IT, they were so badly affected, they couldn't work out which orders needed to be fulfilled, who owed them what money. So they had to draw everything to a halt. And in the end, it cost them about £45 million, which is almost $60 million to try and recover from this. And it took them years.
God, you factor in ransomware payments the way that you do the X percentage of your delivery fleet that will be involved in traffic accidents every year. The cost of doing business, in a sense, is what you're hearing.
Yeah, and also, not only is it a real concern for boardrooms, but also it's a concern for insurers as well, because if you've got cyber insurance to protect your networks from outages or damages or, I don't know, power surges that could fry your chips, something like that, a lot of these insurance companies, they've made quite a lot of money in the last few years by offering cyber insurance for ransomware attacks. But we're starting to see that change now because, of course, these attacks are so frequent and they're so devastating. In many cases, and increasingly, companies are saying, hang on a minute, I don't really want to pay these criminals because the money we know is being used to funnel into other organized crime like human trafficking or narcotics. And when a company tells its insurer, we don't want to pay, that's going to cost the insurer a lot more money to recover. So we know that insurers are starting to put in clauses now that say, I'm sorry, if you get hit by this type of ransomware, or if you didn't do this type of protection system or use this cybersecurity vendor, then we're not going to cover you.
Joe Tidy, cyber reporter, BBC. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For the stock market, in up Friday so far, the NASDAQ is up 1.2%. The S&P is up 1% now. The Dow is up 288 points, 0.9%. Retail sales were unexpectedly weak in April following a spike the month before fueled by stimulus checks. Then retail sales staying flat despite more vaccinations in April takes the edge off some inflation worries. The 10-year interest rate down at 1.63%. Right now, people are buying cars at a near record pace if you can find them at dealerships across the country. There's a lot of empty space where cars and trucks are supposed to be, and given the law of supply and demand, Kelley Blue Book says the average new vehicle price is now more than 40 grand. That's up nearly 10% in 2 years. It's in part the shortage of those microchips buried in cars. Marketplace's Andy Euler joins us here. Andy, there are new indications about how long this microprocessor shortage will be with us?
Right. So we have estimates, David, but nobody's really willing to give a definitive timeline. The companies that make these chips say they're going to spend billions on new capacity. The Biden administration has vowed to make domestic production of those chips a priority. But again, those facilities aren't just going to pop up overnight. In fact, IBM's president Jim Whitehurst told the BBC that people shouldn't hold their breath waiting for an end to this.
It will get better. You're literally looking at a couple of years before we'll get enough incremental capacity online to, I'd say, alleviate, you know, all aspects of the chip shortage. So this isn't a short-term thing. This is going to take a while.
So it costs buyers, Andy, and what's this costing the car industry?
Right. It's sort of the epitome of a supply-demand mismatch, right? Many car dealerships are reporting that they're busier than ever. People want to buy cars. There just isn't supply to get keys into customers' hands. But that supply squeeze, like you said, is driving up the price of cars, so they're celebrating that. And now dealerships are scrambling to get their hands on used cars just to have something to show people. You know, this feels a lot like what we're seeing with homes in the U.S., the squeeze in supply, driving up prices, leading to bidding wars. And it turns out that even those who have the means and want to buy have to act really fast if they want to have a chance to get anything.
Andy Euler in Austin, thank you very much. We've already reported how bikes are hard to buy as well. I guess we're going to be walking. David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.